the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, if we thought last week was crazy with a cup set in the Emperor's Cup semis and some big shocks in J1, well, this week said, hold my beer, as one stunning midweek result blew the title race wide open once again. And on Sunday, little old Kofu went and won the Emperor's Cup.
Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. I didn't think it would get more weird and wonderful than last midweek with their Jubilo Iwata's win against F. Marinos. But yeah, Vettin Ferro Kofu turned up. I thought they were the better team for a large part of this game. And full congratulations to them. It's going to be great to see a J2 side in the ACL. And just hope they enjoy their occasion, because I thought they were magnificent.
Most definitely. So, yes, at the Nissan Stadium on Sunday, Vettin Ferro Kofu drew 1-1 after 120 minutes with Sanfrecce Hiroshima and then won 5-4 on penalties. And joining us again this week is James Taylor from J-Talk Extra Time. James, welcome back. We knew Kofu had done extremely well to make the final, and we just hoped they'd give a good account of themselves. Can you quite believe they actually went and won it?
No, I can't actually, and I don't think a lot of people can either. It's pretty incredible. It was a very exciting weekend for J2 watchers generally, and this was the cherry on top of the cake. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yep, absolutely stunning. So, any listeners that need a refresher, Kofu are the team that are 18th in J2, and they were taking on in the Emperor's Cup final on Sunday Sanfrecce Hiroshima, who are third in J1. But I think, Sam, for a large sections of this game, it was very, very hard to tell who was the J2 team, wasn't it?
Oh, it absolutely was. I thought maybe Hiroshima started the better team over the first 5 or 10 minutes, but didn't really get anywhere near Kofu's goal. And from that point on, especially in the first half, I thought Kofu just took over. They were very comfortable defensively, but then really fluent in the way that they attacked. I really liked the two that were in behind Mitsuhira and Torikai, who James pointed out last week, and Hasegawa as well. I thought he was maybe the man of the match for me. He stood out. He was in so many little pockets that they just couldn't get near him. And then Mitsuhira up front, I mean, he's very noticeable, obviously, with his hair, but he was constantly moving as well. And they just couldn't get to grips with them. And, yeah, for that first half, there was only one team in it. And they got their goal, it was thoroughly deserved. And just they were so comfortable throughout. I mean, Hiroshima, not necessarily the team that are going to go out and have shot after shot after shot, but they really got nowhere near their goal until right towards the end of the second half. So, yeah, Kofu looked like the team that were third in J1, and Hiroshima just really didn't turn up.
Yeah, a stunning turn of events. Motoki Hasegawa, who you mentioned there, Sam, he had a great chance in the 15th minute. I mean, James, Kofu could have been excused for having a massive case of stage fright. Obviously, this is the biggest day in the club's history. But yeah, they took the lead from a short corner in the 26th minute, a superb set piece routine straight off the training ground. I think it was executed better than manager Tatsumi Yoshida could have drawn it up. And it ended with the great man, Kazushi Mitsuhira, side-footing home past Keisuke Osako. You told us about Mitsuhira and his stunning Barnett on last week's episode, James. You'd think he'd be easy to spot and keep track of in the box, but he found half a yard of space to turn in Sho Araki's cross to send the Kofu support into raptures.
Yeah, he's really, really good at doing that, actually. He's been doing that a lot in the league for a team that has been struggling. I don't think we can overstate just how incredible this was, by the way. 18th in J2. They're 18th. Mm. They haven't won for months. They're 18th. They just won. They beat a J1 team in the cup final. But yeah, Mitsuhira, he's very good at finding space in the box. And like you say, I don't see how he can hide with hair like that. But he manages it, and he's a good finisher. And I completely agree with what Sam said just now. I think Kofu were really comfortable for most of this game. Hiroshima started perhaps a bit better, and there are times when you could see the difference in quality because Hiroshima's players were perhaps a little bit faster in a foot race. But when it came to the actual teams, Kofu dealt with Hiroshima really, really well, and it wasn't so much of a kind of backs to the wall defensive performance like the semi-final was against Kashima. there was periods of Hiroshima sort of having pressure, but then there were periods where Kofu had a lot of pressure as well, and they made it count with that really well taken set piece, which I think Hiroshima should have done a lot better with defending that.
Other than the kind of build up to the, like in the previous rounds in this, has there been any sign that this sort of performance is in Kofu? I know they've previously had reasonable spells, like finishing sixth or so. Is this a case of them going back to what maybe worked a couple of seasons ago, or is this just like completely they've just risen to the occasion and that's been the thing that's really helped them turn it on?
Yeah, it's a good question, because they had a good sort of 4 years finishing in the top half, and the last 3 years they were in, well, not 2019, they were in the playoffs. The previous 2020 and 2021, if they'd been playoffs, they would have been in them. So this year is the anomaly, really. And in terms of performances this year, they were pretty good in April, and then that was about it, really. But they have shown glimpses of what they can do in recent games. Last week against Okayama, they really took the game to Okayama, but still managed to lose somehow. A few weeks back, or maybe a month or two back, they're in a very entertaining 2-2 draw with Kanazawa. But it's just another chapter in an incredibly weird season for them, and it's hard to explain. I think they just felt like this is their chance. They've really got to go for it, and it worked eventually.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to come on to talk about Hideyomi Yamamoto, the 42-year-old who ended up being the hero when it looked like he might have been the GOAT. I mean, he's 20th year with Kofu, and I mean, he spent 8 of those in J1, James. So yeah, I mean, Kofu for a period there were an established top flight club, and they didn't necessarily win too many fans with the way they went about things, but I mean, yeah, they held on. I think the last time they were in J1, they were there for a total of 5 years, so they were for a period there fairly well entrenched. And yeah, I mean, this is as you say, this is the tumble down the table that I think has taken a lot of people by surprise. And if this cup run doesn't happen, okay, that's a huge if, and I mean, they were, you know, they deserve massive plaudits for knocking off 5 J1 teams in a row to win the trophy. But if they lose in the first of their games against a J1 opponent, does Tatsuma Yoshida survive this season, do you think?
I don't think he would have, if assuming that they'd had the same league form, then I don't think he would have stayed. He would have been in charge for the whole season, because they have been really bad. I mean, they haven't won for 11 games. Mm. The only teams they've beaten in the last 2 months are J1 teams. they can't beat J2 teams. So that's the sort of form that would lose a manager's job. And I think, yeah, this cup run has, because it's just been so wonderful for Kofu, I think that's earned him a bit more time, and I guess they'll give him a bit of a chance at the start of next year. And
they have to let him manage him through the ACL, whatever that entails for them, doesn't it? He has to at least get the 6 ACL group stage game. Surely that's got to be his reward for winning them the this cup.
Well, yeah, you think so, but isn't that going to be later in the year?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they're really awful for the first 2 months, then it might not be possible, unless they, you know, fire him and then bring him back just for this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd be in favour of that. Yeah, I think he deserves a chance to manage them. However well or poorly things go next year, surely he's got to get the ACL games. Sam, what about the in inverted commas fight back by Hiroshima then after Mitsuhira's goal? Tsukasa Morishima was booked in the first half, but it was still a surprise to see him hooked at halftime along with Douglas Vieira. As you've both said, yeah, it was often hard to tell which was the J1 team and which was the J2 team here. And overall, Hiroshima will be hugely disappointed with their performance on the big stage. it was, yeah, I mean, ultimately, Takumu Kawamura's blasted in an equaliser and taken the final to extra time. But overall, the course of the 90 minutes itself, I mean, yeah, Michael Skibber will have been hugely disappointed with the fact that his team weren't able to stamp their authority on this game really at all.
Yeah, they were really poor. I mean, there was no sort of incisiveness. There was nothing about them that suggested they were going to work their way through. Obviously, Kung Fu were going to sit in a little bit and it's going to be hard for them, but you need a little bit of a clever pass from somewhere and it just wasn't working. I mean, Douglas Vieira, I don't know why he's starting, really. I mean, Ben Cleaver has not necessarily pulled up trees too often, but he is a much, I think, is a better striker. And Sotiriu, they brought in as well. He's got a very good reputation, but yeah, Douglas Vieira starts. I think he's quite a average and like not great striker, and especially against a team that's sitting deep. I mean, he is not really offering much, and that didn't help the likes of Morishima or Mister, because there's no one really to pass it through to them. Not many runs were being made, so it was very easy for Kofu. He could have probably changed 11 at half time and yeah, only managed the two. And then second half, it was slightly better in that they had a little bit more possession, but generally speaking, they weren't moving Kofu out of position. They were able to sit in their position and engage quite well as well, but it was not like they were getting in behind very often. It's not like Kawata had many saves, if any, to make, and it was just that one lapse in concentration where a defender steps out, Kawamura gets in the other side, and a very good finish into the roof of the net. But it was, yeah, it was not necessarily deserved for Hiroshima. It's not like they were knocking the door down at all. So yeah, just really disappointing from Hiroshima. And it's hard to say exactly where this performance had come from. Yes, they lost to Kobe with a rotated team beforehand, but generally speaking, they've been playing very well this season. It's been rare that they've come away with games without really testing an opponent, and this is kind of what they did in this game. It was really poor. And I just wonder, and you probably know more than me, Ben, but this is their seventh consecutive Emperor's Cup final loss, including a time as Mazda SC. Is this just something in that club that they get reached these finals? I think it's two League Cup finals as well that they've lost now. And yeah, do they just get rabbit in the headlights in these finals and there's something there that they're not able to break through?
Yeah, it's a real strange one, isn't it? Most of these players obviously don't have that much cup final experience, so I don't know what you can really put it down to, Sam. It's just unfortunate that for their supporters that they just didn't show up on the big stage. They obviously have another chance this coming Saturday in the Levain Cup final, and then if they fail to perform in that game as well against Cerezo Osaka, then I think there might have to be questions asked. But yeah, I mean, a new manager who doesn't have any of that sort of stink on him, and he wasn't able to rev them up and get the best out of them. So I think let's hold judgment for the moment on this current group of players and see what happens after Saturday. But yeah, it's a strange one that for some reason they can't quite get over the hump in these finals. We mentioned the goal for Kawamura that equalised with 6 minutes to go, James. Before that, though, with about 15 minutes left, a player you mentioned to us on last week's episode, William Lira, lashed a shot across Keisuke Osako, and luckily for Hiroshima, it cannoned off the bar to safety. But I tell you what, that would have almost been one of the all-time great Emperor's Cup final goals if William Lira's audacious attempt had have hit the back of the net.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it? It was almost kind of out of nowhere. I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting him to shoot from there. I think he might try and take the defender on a bit more or get a bit closer, but it would have been fantastic, wouldn't it?
Indeed. So now let's move on then. So yeah, Kawamura has obviously taken a lot of the headlines away from Makoto Mitsuta in recent weeks, with him bursting onto the scene and scoring some important goals for Sanfrecce, including the winner in the quarterfinal against Cerezo Osaka. He lashed in the equaliser in the 84th minute, and then Hiroshima pushed for a winner before the end of the 90. And then throughout extra time, we've mentioned Mitsuta a couple of times, he hit the bar with a free kick early in the first half of extra time. And then into the cauldron stepped 42-year-old Hideyomi Yamamoto, as I said earlier, in his 20th season with Kofu, a veteran of three promotions and three relegations with the club. He came on in the 112th minute. Within 3 minutes, he had conceded a penalty after Mitsuta's ball into the box hit his left arm. And, well, James, as we're going to come on to, ultimately Yamamoto was the hero. But, I mean, what a story that would have been. Well, on the flip side, what a story we ended up getting. But if Yamamoto had have been the GOAT after coming on so late in the game, and if it had all come down to him conceding the penalty, well, yeah, all the Kofu players and supporters would have just been absolutely shattered.
Yeah, I would have been devastated, wouldn't it, to be the, like, Mr. Kofu, but be the reason that they lost. It would have been really a really awful story for him and for Kofu, but fortunately it didn't turn out that way. Because Kohei Kawata was a bit of a hero as well, wasn't he? Mm,
absolutely. Talk us through it, James.
Well, he didn't really have that much to do, I didn't think, for most of the 90, until Hiroshima scored, which was the 84th minute. Before that, he was very decisive, coming for crosses and organising his defence, but otherwise he didn't really have that much to do. And then towards the end of the 90, the last few minutes, and in extra time, he was very busy. And then this penalty was given, and he dived low to his right, got a hand to it, pushed it around the post, turned himself into a hero. Pretty good day for him.
Indeed. I don't know if you follow J1 much, James, but yeah, Mitsuta has been, in some people's eyes, he'll be the J1 player of the season, with F. Martinos and Frontale being so good, you know, across their squads and across their first 11s. Mitsuta's really stood out for Hiroshima this season. And, yeah, I mean, you could see how devastated he was at full time after the shootout. The fact that, yeah, he had the chance. And, Sam, I mean, yeah, devastating for the two of us as well. We've obviously championed Mitsuta's cause. And, I mean, well, as has almost everybody that's seen him play this season, because he's been absolutely tremendous. But, yeah, we obviously huge stones on him to stand up over this penalty with, you know, literally 5 minutes to go in the second half of extra time. And, yeah, to see Kawata guess right and tip it around the post. I mean, it wasn't the hardest hit penalty you've ever seen, and he'd obviously like to take it back and yeah, put it somewhere else. But yeah, really, really disappointing for Mitsuta.
Oh yeah, very disappointing. You can see what it meant to him. But I mean, yeah, bravery to step up and take it. There's a lot of experience in that Hiroshima side, but he was the guy who was playing his first season that stepped up, and also in the penalty shootout. So to take the last penalty in that shootout, or the fifth penalties it would have been, having already missed in extra time, I thought took immense bravery. So I have to give him credit for that. I don't think it was the worst penalty in the world. It was placed fairly well, but not enough power. But yeah, Kawata just gets down really well. It's a superb save, and yeah, he deserved that as well, because he was fantastic throughout the game. As James said, he didn't put a foot wrong. Everything that he did yeah, was perfect. He claimed every ball, he commanded that area, and very readily yeah, just didn't put a foot wrong. So great for him, but just yeah, a real shame for Mitsuta, because, and hopefully that doesn't spoil what has been an incredible season for him.
Yeah, he's still obviously got one more chance at glory this coming Saturday. And well, yeah, Mitsuta and Kawamura have been the two shining lights of Hiroshima's season. Mitsuta throughout it, and yeah, as I said, Kawamura in the last few weeks or slash couple of months. And then unfortunately, Kawamura, after scoring the equaliser, as we said, towards the end of the 90 minutes, ended up being the GOAT, as Kawata guessed right, jumped to his left, got his hand on the ball, and was very relieved to see it bounce away from the goal behind him. And from there, it was left to Yamamoto with Kofu's fifth and final spot kick to win it. And after he looked like it was going to be, he was going to be the victim, he ended up being the hero with what I felt was the best of the 10 penalties taken, James. He's absolutely sent his completely unsavably past Osako to spark wild scenes, as you would imagine, amongst the Kofu players. I'm sure most of them were still pinching themselves and couldn't believe what was happening. But, they were in absolute dreamland after the best day in their club's history.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a great moment, wasn't it? Especially after what had happened about 10 minutes before with the almost terrible ending. turned into a fantastic ending. Great moment for him, great moment for his teammates, the whole club, everyone. It's great for J2. It's fantastic. Great for J Talk Extra Time. It's good for all of us. And also, I read earlier this evening, actually, a really good article about Yamamoto on the J League Register website, which is really good, worth reading as well. But what a story for him and for everyone there.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. I must admit, I'm not in favour of him wearing Olmi on the back of his kit. I'm not in favour of nicknames at all, and especially an abbreviated nickname like Olmi. Can't say I'm in favour of that, but fair play to the veteran. 20 years with the club, and you can't have imagined he would have ever had an opportunity like this, I'm sure, but it's come to pass. Kofu have struck lightning in a bottle, as we said, and they've beaten five straight J1 teams en route to winning the Emperor's Cup. And all the glory goes to the players and their manager Tatsuma Yoshida. Obviously, it's been a very, very difficult season for Kofu in the league, Sam, as James has outlined. But Yoshida, he's got it right. I think he was the calmest man in the stadium at the end of the penalty shootout when he was interviewed on NHK. But he's done it, and the fifth J2 club ever to make the final have repeated the dose that FC Tokyo did in 2011 by winning the Emperor's Cup. And next step is Asia. And what awaits them in continental play, Sam?
Well, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, it's going to start later, so that at least they don't have the start of their season completely disrupted. They can grow into the J2 season, maybe at least keep themselves safe. I'm looking at Jeonnam Dragons in Korea, who won their FA Cup while being a second division team, and this season they finished bottom of K2. So hopefully that's not a sign of things to come for Kofu, but they should get into that league. It's going to allow them to maybe attract a higher standard of player than you would expect a team finishing 18th in J2 to manage because of that continental football. So that will be really exciting. But once they get into the group stage, it's going to be difficult. You imagine they're going to take a team like Ulsan or Jeonbuk from the J League, from the K League, sorry, and don't know whether China will decide to properly get themselves involved in this. But they're going to be really difficult games, and it should be going, I imagine by that time, it should be going back to travelling as well. So it's not like they're going to just have a block in, I don't know, Thailand or whatnot. They might be doing a J2 game at the weekend, fly down to Sydney on Wednesday, come back for a J2 game. It's going to be a really tough experience for them from August onwards, but it's going to be such an incredible experience for their supporters. I mean, I don't know too much about Yamanashi Prefecture, but I don't imagine they've had too many nights or continental nights up there or anything like that to look forward to. So it should be really exciting for them. You get some great players coming to games at Kofu. So it's going to be just an exciting experience for them. I hope it's not to the complete detriment of their league form and that they go down to J3. I hope they are able to really give it a good go. But James, what do you think? If they're whereabouts they are now, like an 18th going into those ACL games, do you think they can still go out and give it a really good go? Or do you think the threat of maybe a relegation to J3 might see all second string Kofu teams in the ACL?
I think it's a bit too early. Well, it's too early to tell. But bearing in mind, they'll get a decent amount of prize money, won't they, for winning the cup?
Yeah.
So, and the fact that they've just won the cup, as you mentioned, they'll be able to, and they're going to play in Asia, they'll be able to attract perhaps a better caliber of player. So they should, in theory, be able to invest and improve the squad and perhaps the academy and various things at the club. And then, as you mentioned, because the ACL is happening later in the year, then they have that time at the start of the year to prepare themselves, prepare the squad, to manage the squad, to figure out what they want to do, how they're going to play, and give themselves that platform so that they can avoid the situation where they are in a relegation battle and having to go all over the place, which would be wonderful trips for them and the supporters, but won't be so fun for the players if they've got to come back and slog through a 42 game season. I don't know if we can judge it too much now, but I can't imagine that that they would be in this situation again next year, although I don't think anyone thought they'd be in that situation this year, so maybe they will be. But I would think that they'll be able to strengthen enough and to have learnt from what happened this year to be higher up in the league table next year when they have to start going off to play the ACL games.
Okay, I'll throw another question at you then. If they attract players and they've got a decent squad and they happen to be in the playoff hunt as the ACL starts, what do you think is more important to that fan base? Is it just the run in the ACL, or is it all the eggs in the basket of getting back into J1?
Oh, that is a good question.
That's a ripper, Sam. That's a ripper.
Yeah. I'll go to my standard answer, which is I don't know. Because, I mean, I can't speak for Corfu supporters, but if it were my club, I mean, I want them to find a way to try and win both, but you know, it's not, perhaps that's not feasible with that, you know, that kind of squad and that budget and that schedule. But I guess it probably would be better to choose one. On the other hand, I mean, if you were a player who you were at Corfu and then you were sort of an established first team player and the manager said to you, well, we're going to the ACL, but I don't want you to play, it would be really disappointing. So I don't know what they would do. I don't know how they'll manage it. And I think that's one of the very interesting things about this situation, is that it's going to be really difficult for the manager and for the club generally to find a balance between this league season, which is 42 games, as I mentioned just now, and the ACL, which has got a lot of long haul trips.
Yeah, it is a terrific question, and an excellent answer there, James. I mean, it's a very difficult one. For me, if I was in the situation, I mean, it's J1 football has to be the priority. But I mean, yeah, they get to enjoy whatever the ACL brings. I mean, yeah, they'll get three home games. Hopefully their stadium is up to scratch with all the right big enough VIP areas and this, that and the other, and hopefully they actually get to play their games at their home stadium in Yamanashi. And yeah, I mean, it'll be an adventure for them. And again, just like this Emperor's Cup run, they've got absolutely nothing to lose. So whoever rocks up to their stadium will, yeah, hopefully get a really competitive game. And Corfu will, leave the competition with no regrets, I'm sure. But yeah, I think, as you said earlier, James, I mean, this season has been the outlier. So if they're looking to attract potential recruits to the club, I mean, okay, yes, we finished 18th this year, but look at what we've done, you know, the previous three or four seasons. We're in J1 six or seven years ago. So, you know, we're, and we can offer ACL football. I mean, any ambitious J2 player, James, any youngster who is half decent that wants to test themselves, I mean, wouldn't you want to go and play for Corfu for at least a season? And, hopefully you're back playing at the sharp end of J2, but you also have the opportunity to test yourself in the ACL if you can crack Yoshida's squad. So for me, I think they'll be able to restock with some of the money that they've got from the Emperor's Cup run, but also they should be able to attract some I would imagine some of the cream of the crop of J2, I would expect them to be knocking on the door of the playoffs. So I think, yeah, Sam, your second question is a more likely eventuality than the first.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. The only thing I have is John Amd kind of did the same. They have, like, they really did invest quite heavily, and it's just gone horrendously wrong for them this season. So I have that slight worry, but I do agree they should be able to attract the cream of the J2 crop. If there are any teams in the top of J1 who are looking to loan out players, and you say, oh, well, if we give them to Corfu, they've got ACL chances as well. I think, yeah, they should really be able to invest heavily. Hopefully it's not just like just the kind of Brazilian circus, and they just send any Brazilian and that'll do. Hopefully they think it out a lot more, but yeah, it should be a really fascinating season to watch, and I'm quite jealous of the J-Talk Extra Time boys that they're going to be able to follow this Kofu team closely next season. Yeah, it should be fascinating, and hopefully they're in a good position in the league as they go to the ACL, and they can give that a really good go, because yeah, John, they had quite an interesting group and they were competitive. So if Kofu can, well, they've proven they can be competitive against the likes of Hiroshima and Kashima and others, so why not give it a good crack? It should be, yeah, great for their supporters, a fantastic experience.
Yes, indeed. So, well, it's tempting to call this the biggest shock in Emperor's Cup history, but I don't know, maybe a different Japanese football podcast was saying the same thing about Chuo University beating Furukawa Electric in the final back in 1962. So I don't want to step on any toes. And of course, we do have the odd cup set in the early rounds when a university or a fourth tier JFL club knocks out a big fish. But I think we can agree in the J-League era, this qualifies as the biggest cup set this late in the competition, and Kofu deserve all the praise that has come their way. And James, yeah, as we said in the green room, we probably weren't expecting to speak with you again this week, because Kofu had a magical run, but I think Sam and myself probably expected that to come to an end against Hiroshima. But yeah, absolutely epic performance from Kofu, and as I said, yeah, there's so many heroes throughout their squad. Mitsuhira for his first half goal, Yamamoto obviously for redeeming himself after giving away the penalty, and Kawata with his two spot kick saves, not to mention the manager, of course, Mr. Yoshida. So thanks for coming back on again this week, and for reliving what was an absolutely unbelievable occasion at the Nissan Stadium on Sunday, and we look forward to how you and John wrap it up on the Extra Time later on in the week.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on again. It's been a pleasure. And I'm looking forward to seeing what John made of it as well.
Welcome back. And next, we'll run through the five J1 fixtures that were made up last Wednesday night. Sam, it was a Wednesday night when the J1 title race was blown wide open once again, when Yokohama F. Marinos' late season struggles, they might be a bit deer in the headlights with the title almost within their grasp. Well, they resurfaced when bottom club Iwata provided the latest shock in this amazing season with a 1-0 win away at the current leaders. So bottom beating top. Does this take over as the greatest shock in recent J1 history?
Oh, not quite. I think the manner of Shonan's victory over Kawasaki, I think, has to edge it. But, I mean, it wasn't a result I was expecting. Like, Jubilo, yeah, pretty much were out of it after losing to, drawing with Kashima late on at the weekend. And for them to have gone to Marinos, who needed to get back to winning ways and to come away with a win, I mean, it's just incredible. I thought, yeah, and it was in the second game in a row where Marinos had all the possession, all of the shots, and they've just been hit on the counter-attack by a clinical team that was 17th or 18th in the league. So, yeah, pretty incredible, but I'm still going to side with Shonan's 4-0.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. But, yeah, I mean, with the stakes being almost do or die for Iwata, and, F. Marinos, again, for the second straight game, having the possibility of clinching the title on their home turf if they had won and Kawasaki had failed to do so. Well, yeah, the fact that Iwata were able to stun them in the manner they did with Yosuke Furukawa's goal just 4 minutes after he came off the bench. His shot on the turn in the 84th minute took a deflection off Eduardo and flashed into the net past Yohei Takaoka. So, we're going to come on to talk a little bit more about Iwata and their prospects of a great escape, Sam, as they have a huge game, one of the biggest in their history, their recent history at least, coming up on Saturday. But, for F. Marinos, as an FC Tokyo supporter, I know all about late season collapses when the title is almost within your grasp. What else can you put it down to other than F. Marinos just having two bad days and, as you said, failing to take their chances? Do you think they're starting to feel the pressure after, so long of being, seemingly the most free-flowing team in the league?
I think they must be feeling the pressure, but they're going to have to look at it. And they've had two games where they've dominated possession. They've had over 50 shots, I think, across the two games. And really, they should have won them. And they're just going to look at it and go, how have we possibly lost one of those games, let alone both of them? So I still don't think they need to panic. They've still got the 2-point advantage. But yeah, you've got to be slightly worried, I suppose, if you're losing to Gamba and Iwata and not scoring, because Marinovsk, you know, yeah, they're free-flowing. They should be scoring two or three, and they generally do score two or three every game. I just think maybe, and we've praised Kevin Muscat for the way he's changed his team around a little bit, but maybe there were a little bit too many changes in this one, changing most of that front three, and there wasn't necessarily the cohesion that there often is in that team. But maybe that's just clutching at straws, that's the phrase there, because yeah, they should have won this game. I mean, they didn't really create too much in that first half, and yeah, they were dealt with like against a really deep defence that were really sitting back and not giving them any space. They struggled for that. But second half, they still managed to create chances. They got into really good areas, but it was just that last ball was not there. And I just think, yeah, on any other day in both of these games, they would have won them quite comfortably. So it's hard to say, yeah, it's all falling apart for F. Marinos, because I don't think it is. But yeah, there are things that they need to work on. They need to be a little bit quicker against teams that are going to sit in. But then again, their next two games are Reds and Kobe, and I think they'll find those maybe easier opponents, because both of those teams are going to be more open. So yeah, I think just, yeah, I know it's hard to brush two results under the carpet and move on, but I think that's kind of what they have to do.
All right, then. So in the blink of an eye, F. Marinos's 8-point lead over Kawasaki has shrunk back to just 2 after Frontale won 3-1 at home over Kyoto last Wednesday. And in a remarkable quirk in the schedule, both of the top two have to play now safe Kobe in the final two match days. Vissel locked up their survival with a 1-0 home win over Shonan on Wednesday that saw them haul themselves up to 10th on 40 points. So yeah, Frontale host Vissel in match day 33 on Saturday the 29th, with the F. Marinos hosting Urawa, as Sam's just mentioned, at the same time. And then on the final day of the season, Saturday the 5th of November, F. Marinos travel to Kobe to face Vissel, while Kawasaki make the short trip across the Tamagawa to face Classico rivals FC Tokyo. So, the last couple of match days obviously are going to be ginormous. And, watch this space, listeners, because, the title race is well and truly back on. In the other two games from last Wednesday that we haven't mentioned, FC Tokyo beat Cerezo Osaka 4-0 at home, with Ryoma Watanabe scoring a perfect hat trick, and Urawa drew 1-1 at home against Sapporo. Consadole are edging ever closer to safety. They could still mathematically finish 16th, but a point from either of their final two games or any dropped points by Gamba Osaka will seal their spot in J1 in 2023, I think. Although, of course, Shimizu have a game in hand on Sapporo, so maybe I've slightly jumped the gun there. But basically, yeah, Sapporo, one more win will definitely secure their safety. And, Sam, before we finish last Wednesday, I should thank you again on behalf of all the patrons for another excellent write-up in quick, smart time. We're pretty sure that's going to be the last one of the season, but you definitely went out with a bang.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, it was just slightly short notice. I thought I'd wrapped up in May. I think I wrote that at the end of that one. I thought there was no more midweek games coming. But yeah, this was a fantastic one. There always are, I think, these J-League midweek rounds. They keep me on my toes. Not 9 games, thankfully, so I can concentrate on the ones that mattered. Yeah, so thank you to anyone that read that. Hopefully it was worth your while.
Most definitely. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sure everybody else did as well. So, let's wrap up the episode with a look at what's coming up this weekend. And then we will hand out our first silverware of the season on the J-Talk podcast. We've got five Player of the Season awards to hand out. And we will do that after we talk about Saturday's Levain Cup final at the National Stadium, Hiroshima face Cerezo Osaka. Of course, Hiroshima's last two games were a 4-0 battering, of course, a much-changed 11, suffered a 4-0 battering at Kobe in J1, and then they've just had the heartbreak of losing the Emperor's Cup final on penalties, whereas Cerezo Osaka, well, they're coming off that thumping themselves at FC Tokyo last midweek, but they have a score to settle after their limp performance in last year's Levain Cup decider against Nagoya. So, I've just kind of undersold it, I think, Sam, but yeah, hopefully these two teams can serve up an exciting product for the spectators that rock up to the National Stadium on Saturday. I think, Cerezo have unfinished business from this competition, and Hiroshima want to atone for last Sunday's disappointing performance.
Yeah, it makes for an interesting game because generally, you've got the top two, but I think Hiroshima and Cerezo have probably been the most, them and Kasha have been probably the more impressive teams in J1, so it's good that they've got this final, but both teams are not coming in with a great amount of steam behind them with the recent performances and results, but it should be a really interesting match. Both teams, firstly Hiroshima need to try and find a way over this finals bump. I mean, how do you pick yourself up after losing to Kofu in the manner that they did? It's going to be a really difficult one for Michael Skibber to manage, but Cerezo were not coming in under any great form. They were rubbish, I thought, against FC Tokyo, but they've got to atone for last season's final defeat against Nagoya. So it's a really difficult one to call. It should be a really interesting merger of styles, but neither team are necessarily forward thinking, and that's their first thing. It's kind of more sit deep and counter attack, so it might be more of a chess game. I'm not sure we should be thinking it's going to be a 3-2 thriller or anything like that, but it should be a really fascinating game. There's plenty of talent on display, so I can't call this one. I'm not going to bother because I'll just ruin it for whoever I back against. So but it should be a fascinating game. Both teams deserve something from this season. I think both teams probably deserve some silverware, but only one team is going to manage it. So, it should be a really interesting match.
Agreed. And, I won't waste the listeners' time with a prediction either. But, let's just hope for an exciting game. And, may the best team win. Also on Saturday, kicking off after the Levain Cup final is finished, is a rearranged J1 game that was originally postponed in the aftermath of a typhoon number 15 that hit Shizuoka Prefecture especially hard. Shimizu, who are second from bottom, they host bottom club Iwata in the Shizuoka Derby. And as I said earlier, this is the biggest game in Iwata's recent history, and I think it qualifies along similar lines for S-Pulse as well. S-Pulse have been a bit deer in the headlights lately, haven't they, Sam? They have not won in four, but they would leap up to 13th with a win and would go above 16th-placed Gumba with a draw. Iwata obviously gave themselves hope with that incredible win over F. Marinos last Wednesday. But as Sam mentioned, they might still be left to rue that Kashima stoppage time equaliser the previous weekend. But still, they have given themselves a chance of pulling off a great escape, and they would move to within a point of S-Pulse and two of Gumba should they win on their fiercest rivals patch on Saturday. This should be must-watch TV, I think, Sam.
Yes, I think it always is the Shizuoka Derby, but with so much riding on it, this is going to be an epic game. I think Shimizu, you look at the teams on paper, you think the quality is with Shimizu, but it's all in attack. And as we've seen, ever since they got up to, what was it, 12th or 13th, they now go in front and then fall apart and just panic. And Jubilo are going to be able, they're always a team that are going to pick away at you. They're going to score goals. They generally get a goal in a game. And I think, if Shimizu, I can see them faltering, and it's not great to be on the Shimizu bandwagon and thinking this, but it just seems another game that they might slip up in. So I think it's going to be highly charged. It's going to be a really good atmosphere. I can see plenty of goals because I don't think either team can particularly defend. So I think while it might be the showpiece event earlier in the day, I think this game is the one for the neutral. I think this could be an absolute epic, and obviously it makes or breaks one team season. I can see the loser of, I think the loser of this probably goes down. I don't know how they recover from it, especially if it's Iwata, but Shimizu, it's a huge opportunity. They have to win this, and I just think they're going to falter. I don't think they're going to falter. The Iwata are going to make the great escape.
Goodness gracious, mate. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating and absolutely phenomenal game in prospect with so much on the line, of course. So, I guess the chips are still strewn all over the shop, so they won't begin to settle after Saturday's Shizuoka Derby, because even if they lose, Iwata could still technically get out of automatic relegation, as they have two more dogfighters to play in their final two match days. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, and we'll see what happens first in the Shizuoka Derby on Saturday, and we'll round it up obviously in next week's episode. All right then, so we're time to give out some silverware, and the first five teams at Players of the Season Awards for 2022. Thanks to all of our patrons that took part in our polls over the course of the last 5 days, the last one which was Kobe just wrapped up on Monday afternoon. So our original plan was to do the teams who were 6th through 10th in the table at the end of the previous weekend. But of course, once we started the poll with the 6th placed Kashiwa on whichever day it was, FC Tokyo then played on Wednesday and went above both Reysol and Kashima and into 5th. So our original plan to have Tokyo also included went out the window. And yeah, Kobe's win that took them ultimately to safety also took them into 10th spot in the table and above Nagoya on goal difference. So they were also included at the 11th hour. Sam, we can just rubber stamp some of these, I think, but there are a couple that definitely deserve some debate as the polls went right down to the wire. So let's talk about them as we did them in chronological order. The first one was Kashiwa Reysol. Only 3 nominees and 15 votes were cast by our patrons. Taiyo Koga finished a distant 3rd behind Mao Hosoya, who garnered 7 votes, and Mateus Savio, who got 6. So Savio obviously with plenty of support here, but Hosoya was the narrowest of winners. Which side of this fence are you on?
Yeah, I was with the patrons just about on maybe the deciding vote, I'll say, with the Mao Hosoya. I just think over the course of the season, he's been a little bit more consistent than Savio. Maybe Savio's highs have been higher than Hosoya, but I just think Hosoya, given like at the start of the season, I don't think anyone thought anything would happen with Hosoya. He looked like an okay prospect, but didn't really look like he was going to be a starting striker for a team that's going to finish, well, top half or challenging for the ACL as they have been most of the season. But yeah, I think Hosoya has done really well. He's dealt with Douglas being out and had to lead that line and managed to get himself into the Japan national team. So I think, yeah, he's very worthy of the award. I wouldn't have been disappointed if Savio had won either, but I think, yeah, 8 goals for Hosoya, I think, is a decent return. And I would have given it him. Did you have any other thoughts on that, Ben?
I think you're right that, yeah, Savio's heights were probably higher, but yeah, he shone very brightly at the start of the season, and he's obviously been pretty much ever present. But yeah, Hosoya has been terrific, and yeah, he would have I abstained actually from this particular poll, but yeah, he would have gotten my vote if I had clicked on. I was pleased to see Savio get the support he did, but yeah, I think Hosoya is a deserving winner. So congratulations, Mao. You are the first cab off the rank, and yes, the first player of the season from 2022, the Kashiwa Reysol Player of the Season. Next, we'll move on to Kashima Antlers, who were 5th when we originally started these polls, but yeah, slipped down to 6th after Tokyo's win on Wednesday. So where Antlers' poll went ahead instead, 17 votes cast here, Sam, and a very decisive decision by our patrons. I must admit, it took me by surprise and actually had me wondering whether there was a sub-line group for our patrons that I wasn't aware of, and they might have been going for Suzuki for shits and giggles, because for me, Yuta Higuchi and Arthur Kaike both deserved more votes than they got, I suppose. I was expecting this to be very close, and I wondered if it was actually a bit of a piss take by our patrons. But obviously, I'm forgetting the first half of the season when Yuma Suzuki and ISA Wada were our front two in our team of the half season. But for me, I guess, you know, every Batman needs a Robin. And once Wade departed, for me, Suzuki has just cut a very frustrated figure. And yeah, hasn't been the same player without his buddy alongside him. So, yeah, as I said, I was expecting Higuchi or Kaiki to get right up alongside Suzuki. But ultimately, our patrons have spoken. Do you agree? And do you agree that he is a winner by such a decisive margin?
Well, I pick Suzuki as well. Whether it should be as decisive or not, I'm not really sure. I think first half of the season, as you say, him and Wada, they linked up so well. They scored plenty of goals between them. I think he was a key part of why Wada did really well, and Wada likewise was a key part of why Suzuki was doing well. I think just the second half of this season, you could say maybe it'd be closer, but nobody has done anything in this Kashima team. They've fallen off so much. Yes, Suzuki has cut a frustrated figure, but no, it's not like Higuchi or Kaike have really stepped up to a degree that puts them over the way that Suzuki was playing in that first half of the season. So I was probably in agreement with the manner of the poll here. I think Suzuki, yeah, he's quite clearly one of the best players in that team, and that first half of the season has really put him over. I do find it really interesting for how unpopular he is that he's now won two popularity contests among our patrons, which is great to see for me, because I'm a big fan of Suzuki. So yeah, I'm happy with this poll, but yeah, it was really difficult. If you're doing a player of the second half of the season for Kashima, I don't think you'd be able to find anyone. So I think that's where it might have been a bit closer, but yeah, Suzuki absolutely fine for me, I think. Yeah, quite clear winner.
Yep. Okay then. Well, I'm happy to rubber stamp that then. Our patrons, speaking in droves, and Sam backing them up there. So congratulations, Yuma. I don't know what you'll do with the trophy, mate, but it's yours, and well deserved. It's a clear cut winner according to the voters. Next, there was not a clear cut winner in the Urawa Reds poll that received the highest number of votes over the course of our five polls in this past week. 20 votes cast, and this one, as similarly to the Kashiwa poll, went right down to the wire. Sam, one of our favourites, Yusuke Matsuo, ended up taking the patrons' vote with 9 votes ahead of Alex Schultz, who got 8, Atsuki Ito 3. And I should give a shout out to Pudini and Riol, who mentioned in the comments of the poll article that, they would have voted for Ken Iwao. So, thanks to them for getting in touch and, making their voices heard on Urawa's player of the season. We're both huge fans of Matsuo, Sam, but for me, if it was up to me, and I don't know whether you're going to agree or not, I would actually go with Schultz here, I think, for his consistency over the course of the season. And Matsuo has obviously done extremely well at times, filling in inverted commas for Kasper Juncker or any of the other strikers at Reds' disposal up front. But for me, and it's not just the number of goals, obviously, because most of Schultz's goals come from the penalty spot. But for me, he's been Reds' best player this season. I don't know if we're going to have to arm wrestle or Junkin for this, but what do you think?
I don't think I've got much of a position because I'm with 3 of the patrons with Atsuki Ito. That's who I voted for. I thought this was a really difficult vote, and it's harsh on Ishikawa that he's come 5th in a 4-horse race with Iwao pipping him. But this is really difficult because I think Schultz's first half of the season absolutely fantastic, very consistent, has to deal with Iwanami alongside him, has made plenty of errors. But I thought second half of the season Schultz has started to have a few errors creep into his game as well, so I'm not 100% sold on him. Matsuo didn't really start the season. I think he was injured, then didn't really come in. But during their best period, especially during that run in the ACL, he was probably key to that. So I can see why he's got the votes that he has. I just think, I thought Ito had been so consistent in that midfield. He's the one that takes the ball on. Iwao does a lot of the work in behind it. But it's Ito that does that link between midfield and attack. And I think he's been generally very consistent. So that's where my vote went. If I was to choose between the other two, I think I would go Schultz, because Matsuo, like a bit like Matteo Savio, Matsuo's highs may have been higher, but Schultz has been the more consistent across the season. So, if you're going Schultz, and I think I'd bring the poll up to 9-9, and then we might have the deciding vote and, give it to Schultz. But, it's a difficult one. I really wanted Ito to win, but so I'm a little sad that he didn't get the votes I wanted.
Well, yeah, very, very line ball. And, you know, I'm a big rap for Ito as well. But, yeah, for me, Schultz just edges it. So, yeah, if you're happy to go along with that, Sam, then we will give we'll give the award to Alex Schultz and congratulate him. Yusuke, better luck next year, son. We're all behind you. So, yeah, hopefully he can go one better next season and leave it no doubt in the minds of the patrons, who is Urawa's player of the year. So Alex Schultz gets the gong, and next we'll move on to Sagan Tosu, where 13 votes were cast amongst our shortlist of four players, and Kei Koizumi with 7, and the other midfielder for in the center of the park for Tosu, Akito Fukuta, got 4. So Koizumi wins it by a decent enough margin there. Sam, are you happy to go along with that?
Yeah, I was very happy with this. I picked Koizumi. I think he has been, yeah, consistent is another word we continually use here, but he has been Mr. Consistent for Tosu. I think he's got an injury right now, so he's going to miss the end of the season. So I don't think it's much of a surprise that they've lost those two games that he's missed. But yeah, I think he has come in. He's just a really experienced head. He's got good movement in there. He keeps everything ticking. I think everything goes through Koizumi at some stage in any Tosu attack. So yeah, I'm really happy that he's been got the votes that he got. I think Fukuta has done equally quite well in that midfield, and yeah, it was good for him to get those 4 votes. And maybe I would have given a few more to Taisi Miyashiro, especially as he's kept out J-League Golden Boot winner Yuki Kakita all season. So, but yeah, I'm happy with Koizumi. Where would your vote have gone?
Yeah, I like Fukuta, but yeah, Koizumi is a fine selection. So yeah, I'm more than happy to go along with that. I mean, you know, I said in the article that accompanied the poll that, you know, Tosu just continued to be greater than the sum of their parts. And I mean, you know, last off season they lost their two previous J-Talk players of the season in Eduardo and Yuta Higuchi. So the fact that yeah, they're still in mid-table with yeah, a squad that is continually gutted, seemingly transfer window to transfer window, is yeah, obviously huge credit to the club as a whole and the coach Kenta Kawai for what he's done this season. And yeah, happy to rubber stamp Kei Koizumi as Sagan's player of the season in 2022. And finally, we'll wrap things up for our first series of polls with Vissel Kobe. Yes, the late bolter into the top 10 at the end of the season. And yeah, we're obviously wondering where they're going to finish with the games against the top two in the last two match days. Their poll was, obviously an interesting one, Sam, as they all were. But you said basically it would be impossible to choose a player of the season in the second half of the year for Kashima. Obviously, for Kobe, but I don't know, maybe the first 25 weeks of the season, it would have been very, very challenging to come up with a shortlist for them as well. So ultimately, we did settle on 4 names, but I don't know, it's a difficult list to put together because it was hard not to have a recency bias, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, when I was thinking of it, I was thinking maybe Kenta Hashimoto deserves to be in there because they had quite a good run when he was there for that short amount of time. It's really hard because Muto has obviously been out injured but looked good whenever he's played. Osako, I think, has been vital to their recent turnaround. But, I mean, he's been injured for so long, and even when he was sort of in the squad, he was coming off the bench because he wasn't really fit, so it was hard to really go with him. So yeah, it was a difficult one. I think the patrons got it right with Koya Urukia. He came in from Reds. I think he was one of the only, you've got those main players, Osako, Muto, Iniesta, Yamaguchi, those are the names that they've got there, but Urukia, out of everyone else, is the one that has stepped up. He's the one that looks to get on the ball. He looks to yeah, make things happen rather than just looking at Iniesta or whoever it might be and say, you do it. So, yeah, I'm happy with him as the winner of this poll. I think, yeah, he's just improved as the season has gone on, as Kobe have, but it's not like he was phoning it in either at the start of the season. I think he's generally had a high level of performance. So, yeah, any arguments against Urukia?
No, it's great. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have expected it at the start of the season, but yeah, he was kind of squeezed out at Reds, wasn't he? And you know, it's not at all a sideways move here for him. I mean, he you know, he's a very good player and an ambitious one as well. And yeah, I think he can look forward to a very bright future at Kobe. And he's Yeah, in amongst the dross that Kobe were for a lot of the season, he was often their brightest spark in attack. And, yeah, late on in the season, he's obviously continued his good form. So, yeah, Yuruki was the winner. He got an actual majority of the 11 votes cast by our patrons, 6 votes going to Yuruki and 3 to Yuya Osako. So congratulations, Koya. Your move was worthwhile then. You've won the JTalk Player of the Season for Vissel Kobe for the 2022 season. All right, so we will leave it there. I think our plan at the moment, Sam, is to do the current top 5 for our patrons to vote on for the remainder of this week, and then we'll wrap those polls up in next week's episode. If there's a change to that agenda, obviously the patrons will find out about it once the first poll is posted in the next couple of days. So, another phenomenal week in Japanese football, that amazing Emperor's Cup final, and obviously some pretty crazy J1 games to recap as well. So we'll look forward to the Levain Cup final on Saturday and the Shizuoka Derby that follows it. And we'll talk about those two games and our next series of polls on next week's episode.
Yeah, look forward to it. It's going to be two fantastic games. That's Shizuoka Derby. I think tune in if you can. So that, I think it's 8 a.m. UK time. So yeah, perfect time to wake up to and watch a bit of Shizuoka football. So yeah, looking forward to wrapping both of those games up with you next week.
Brilliant stuff. Hopefully my computer cooperates, Sam. All right, so we will leave it there. That's it for this week's episode of the JTalk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank James Taylor once again for his time in part one of this week's episode. We'd like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support. If you'd like to get involved and vote in our next series of polls, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The JTalk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.